Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. We have two guests coming on today. The first, of course, is the indomitable, beyond an era, Lisa Ehr, who has lived through a number of eras, including those of many protests since back in the 60s, and now here she is leading protests herself. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinnie.
Can we just start off by talking about Kiwis Connect? I think, speaking of Kiwis Connect, Penny should be online any minute, AFR, so if you just keep watching her little Skype thingy, she should be online soon. About Kiwis Connect, because you're holding a demo for democracy this Sunday. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's quite exciting because it's nationwide, Vinnie. We've got 12 centres that where we've got marches or rallies, something happening, The idea behind it is really, when we looked at the whole situation, what's happening financially, I mean, it affects the whole world, but we're really talking about New Zealand here because we're a small place and we can affect change here. The corporatization of everything. Everything is operated around finance, money, big business, small groups of people getting extremely rich. And so when we looked at that, we thought, we've got to make the connections here. We've got to draw the dots between, for example, the food, huge agribusiness, putting in genetic engineering around the world, which we haven't done yet in New Zealand, fortunately, and mining. I mean, they're wanting to mine beautiful places in New Zealand for oil and sand and coal, and do we need this? Are there not now alternative technologies? You can look at the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which is coming up in New Zealand. Vinnie, have you done anything on your shows about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement?
A little bit. Now, we've got Penny calling in now. AFR, would you be able to ring her and add her into the conversation, please? That would be really nice. Because, I think the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I relate it to the European Economic Community that happened a number of decades ago. And what happened there essentially was it was the setup of a powerful multi-state government using trade as the hook. You know, come in here, sign this trade deal, and all of your money woes will go away. When instead, with the new currency and everything, it's only made Europe even more prone to economic collapse. And now they have a European Parliament which passes an awful lot of laws that people just don't want, with like unelected representatives putting the legislation in.
Well, yes, that's true. I mean, it's all about big money, but the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is really about American trade dominance of the whole Pacific Rim. So there's about 11 countries involved in this, and a lot of Americans are not happy about it. And there are people now in Congress who have started making a noise and saying, hey, why is this so secret? Why are we not finding out the text of what's going on? So I believe that there are talks going on in Brunei as we speak. And in our New Zealand professor, Jane Kelsey, she's over there, so we'll find out. She'll be on a plane, unfortunately, flying back on September the 1st when we have our demonstrations. But quite honestly, there's some really insidious things in there, one of them being what's called investor states disputes clauses. Now, if New Zealand signs up to the TPPA and signs up for these investor states disputes clauses, it means that the multinational companies can take our government to court should we perhaps put any law in that might affect their profit. So if we suddenly in New Zealand, as environmentalists, suddenly say, we don't want any fracking here, we want a law that outlaws fracking, then the companies that are operating here or have any sort of deal to come in will say, well, this is going to cost us money. We will sue you for, let's say, 30 years projected loss of profit. And that will be paid.
And then we'll be fracked.
Yeah, we'll absolutely be fracked, Vinny. So, you know, our government with 4 million people can't possibly pay the sort of projected amounts of money that these companies will be asking for. And there are incidences in Ecuador where some of these trade agreements and things have been suing small countries like that already. So there's some insanity going on here.
I believe, and it might have been Ecuador or Bolivia, they've recently outlawed McDonald's because it's not fit for human consumption. Jamie Oliver proved it in the US court. Now, we have Penny Bright joining us now. Welcome to the show, Penny.
Oh, hi, Vinny. Sorry about that. Gremlins.
Yeah, the old digital gremlins, they can be rather frustrating, especially if you feed them after midnight. Now, speaking of burning the midnight oil, we're talking here about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, and I was wondering what your take is on all of this, Penny.
Well, I've actually attended two Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement negotiations as a stakeholder. Twice now, managed to get in, dreadful thing about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I mean, it's an investors' treaty, but it's the secrecy and the lack of transparency at the highest levels when signing such an investors' treaty would have such a massive impact on New Zealanders and our rights, and we're not allowed to know about it. And, I mean, you compare that with the massive violations of our civil liberties and intrusions on the lives of ordinary people, our rights to privacy, like with the GCSB Act, which has just been railroaded through, and yet this absolute lack of transparency and accountability at the highest levels. Well, how does that work when the will of the people is supposed to be the authority of government? Well, where's that bit come in?
Somebody told me at the TPPA march that the TPPA treaty is going to be good, except for the part that benefits the Americans. And I said to him, okay, do you know what's in it? And he's like, well, no. And I say, that's because it's secret, okay? When was the last time you swallowed a pill that said it was a supplement and the ingredients were totally secret and maybe parts of it were poison, like cyanide or whatever? Would you still take that pill? Because it doesn't matter what part of the TPPA you swallow the whole pill.
Well, the fact of the matter is that what is good for big business isn't usually good for the majority of us. And the reality is this whole neoliberal Rogernomics model has been... It was actually based on an absolute rotten of fraud that public is bad, private is good. Well, I mean, we've had about 30 years now, and surely it's time to actually check the mantra against the facts. And, I mean, like at local government level, for example, all this contracting out of services that used to be provided in-house, I just ask people one question. Have your rates gone up or down? Game set match, because if it was all so efficient, well, wouldn't your rates go down? And same at central government level. I mean, with all this, all these consultants and private contractors everywhere through all these different services provided at central and local government, where is the money going and who is benefiting? Are you getting better services? Are the services cheaper? No. Well, it's time to roll back Rogernomics. It's time to roll back this neoliberal model. It's time to take our towns, our cities, our regions and our country back from corporate control. And so full credit for Lisa and the Awareness Party for kicking off this you know, the Kiwis Connect marches and rallies that are happening all over New Zealand coming up this Saturday. Really encourage people to get out there, and I mean, Lisa can give more details, but it's a great initiative, and it's about time.
Thank you, Penny. I agree with everything that you've said there. I mean, not just about I'm talking about community and the local government. we should have far more participation from the masses, but everybody's switched off because everything's coming from the top down, so people think that they can't affect any change, so they switch off. Whereas what we need to do is we need to reclaim people power and get people involved from the local government level and groups of people that feed into local government, and then local government should be feeding into central government. But we've been trying to get Auckland City GE free, and Amy Adams, National MP, came out and said, oh no, we want central government to make those sorts of decisions. That's not for local government. Basically, she's trying to put us with local government being just for roads, rates and rubbish. But it can be so much more.
Well, of course. It occurs to me that all they're really interested in collecting our taxes for is to railroad us and give us rubbish as a result.
Well, the reality is that, especially in Auckland, under this super city, super rip-off that was forced upon us back on the 1st of November 2010, and some of us, and you were there at the beginning, Vinny, when we set up the Stop the Super City. When, I mean, some of us, like Lisa and Lisa Prager and myself, we were there from day one when we gate crashed the meeting of the bad mayors, the four bad mayors who wanted to help railroad through the super city legislation and against the ARC. And we said, you've got no lawful right to do this, because where is the rule of law in all of this? The rule of law being, under the Local Government Act, Section 24, Schedule 3, Subsection 49, there had to be a binding vote of electors before you amalgamated and brought together councils. We, the public, were supposed to have a say on it. And because central government knew that we weren't going to wear it, they railroaded through the super city legislation. And just to clear up a few facts here, the facts are that it was under Labor that they were, under Helen Clark's government, they wanted to push through the super city, and it was a petition that I got Peter Sharples to present, I think it was back in about November, December 2006, which the Greens and the Māori Party supported, that there'd be no legislative change to the governance of the Auckland region until the public had a chance to participate. And what happened was that helped to throw a spanner in the works. And then what happened was we had the Royal Commission on Auckland Regional Governance, which sort of slowed up the process for about 18 months. But the reality is that then, as tends to happen, you know, one government starts something, the other one helps to finish it, then the super city legislation was railroaded through. Now, what was made was a big deal about Rodney Hyde was the main one responsible. Well, actually, no, he wasn't, actually. He just sort of finished it off. But the reality
just a frontman.
Well, the reality is that the most significant recommendation of the Royal Commission for Auckland Regional Governance was the CCO model being used, and that was their recommendation, their most important one. And I did a whole lot of research, and what I found out was that nobody had ever done any form of cost-benefit analysis on the cost-effectiveness of the CCO model. And I checked with the Department of Internal Affairs. They had never done one. None of the eight councils in the Auckland region had ever done a cost-benefit analysis of CCOs. Neither had the Office of the Auditor General. And to cap it off, I have in my possession a letter with a Treasury, from Treasury with their letterhead up the top, saying that they had never done a cost-benefit analysis. You've got to ask yourself, where is the due diligence when if you want to put 75% of Auckland regional rates into the CCO model when nobody's ever sharpened their pencils and actually double-checked that that's a cost-effective way of spending ratepayers' money? It's outrageous.
Indeed. Indeed. 75, I believe I mentioned this to John Banks at a meeting out in West Auckland, said that 75% of the council business being done by these CCOs that have never had a cost-benefit analysis does not benefit the 100% of Aucklanders who never got a say about whether or not they want this to govern their city. And he says to me, that sounds like a speech from Penny Bright. And what I should have said there is that sounds like a response from a weaseling scumbag politician who doesn't want to answer a straight fracking question. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Lisa Eyre from the Awareness Party, the organiser of the Demo for Democracy, and Penny Bright from waterpressure.wordpress.com are my very special guests. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. And my very special guests are Penny Bright, how long have you been a hardcore activist? Like, basically since the Springbok tour, maybe a little earlier. She's officially listed by the State Intelligence Services on the list of subversives, so it's a good fit for the show. And Lisa Eyre, the creator of Lisa's Hummus, which is like nice or all organic and everything like that. And you told me one time that there's copious quantities of hoops you have to jump through, red tape and stuff of that nature that's involved with food preparation and having any kind of sizable business in this country, which, to my mind, just kind of thinks to me like, that means that anybody who's just an ordinary bloke with a really good idea and so on and so forth, unless he's willing to jump through all of that and go through all the rigmarole, he won't even bother setting up his own independent, non-slavery type business. That's the problem with this country.
It's getting more difficult, Vinny. It wasn't so bad when I did it, because, I mean, I just started in my kitchen with no capital. But now it's much more difficult. The food bill, which is another of these harmonizing sort of laws to harmonize everything with U.S. laws and this whole Pacific Rim, will make it much harder for people because the costs, the compliance costs are so high. In my day, it wasn't so expensive to do all the, to jump through all the hoops. When you're starting also, nothing, you know, and you haven't got any money, you can't pay, you know, $200 here, you know, $1,000 there. You haven't got the money.
So just on that, a bit of my background, people probably don't know much about, is that I'm actually a tradesperson. I have advanced trade in sheet metal engineering. I was New Zealand's first ticketed woman weld inspector, and I was a quality assurance coordinator for a stainless steel fabricator. So I actually know quite a bit about stainless steel and the dairy industry because I was a welding tutor for 9 years at Monaco Tech, and my specialty area was gas tungsten arc welding, TIG welding, of stainless tube for what was the New Zealand Dairy Welding Standard 4703. And of course, with all this Fonterra kerfuffle that's been happening, I mean, I was very, very interested into what caused this dirty pipe. Because in 1997, I got the award at the New Zealand Institute of Welding Conference. I was the only woman. And my paper, which was how to avoid welding defects in gas tungsten arc welding of stainless steel, got the award for the best technical paper. So I know a bit about this subject, and I was regarded as an expert. So I was just really interested to know, well, what caused this dirty pipe? And now, of course, the news is that they got it all wrong in the first place. But I did a bit of SWOT, and I discovered to my horror that the New Zealand 4703 dairy welding standard for stainless steel tube is no more. That in April 2011, it got transmogrified and swallowed up by a joint Australian-New Zealand standard. And basically, in terms of training, it seems that technical institutes don't actually train in this area. And because I have a quality assurance background, I know that the training of people to be able to do the job in a proper way is absolutely pivotal. So that really, really concerns me. So what I was considering doing was to make my expertise available to the four separate inquiries that were supposed to be happening into the into this Fonterra debacle, because there's a big difference between quality assurance and quality control. And it seems to me that these inquiries are all focused on the quality control. Or how long, how come it took so long to find out when a this mistake happened? Quality assurance is to stop the mistake happening in the first place. And was there a bug trap as a result of a welding defect in this, because it will be stainless steel pipe, was that the root cause? And is it because the fitters on the job out at the Fonterra plant have not been properly trained? Are they contract fitters? Are they in-house fitters? Do they know what they're doing? I mean, these are serious and practical questions, and it seems that nobody else is asking them. So,
Penny, I'm not even aware what this Fonterra debacle that you're actually alluding to actually is.
Well, this thing that's caused a big dent in New Zealand's international reputation, the fact that there was a scare about this botulism, and were Fonterra milk products, particularly for infants, safe to drink? It's a big deal. And, of course, what happened was there was this big scare and this big recall, but because they understood that it was caused by this botulism. And now what they're saying was, oh, sorry, folks, false alarm. There wasn't actually this botulism in the first place. And meanwhile, we've had all this major panic. We've had countries that, you know, have been blocking Fonterra imports. I mean, what a pig's breakfast. But, I mean, so...
I was under the impression that the melanine scandal was actually deliberately put into baby powder, and it was signed off by a Fonterra exec and just said, "Yeah, let's just put this in."
Well, I mean,
that was the previous.
That was not this current debacle.
So it's happened again.
well, this is the thing, you know. It's important that you do things in a proper way, you know. And if you do take common sense, due diligence, and make sure that you have proper plans and organisation in place, and then you have your quality control checks along the way to make sure that your overarching plan is actually being implemented, that's how you debug the job and make sure everything goes smoothly. It comes down to quality assurance, and that's the same with the GCSB. If anybody, that's the Government Security Communications Bureau, and if anyone has bothered to read the Rebecca Kitteridge report into the state of the GCSB, you would see, oh my God, what a pig's breakfast. I mean, a very covert organisation that deals with information, and it doesn't even have a proper information management system in place. And the devil's always in the detail, but when you bother to read this stuff, and given that I do have a quality assurance background, I just think, good God, as you would say, Vinny, you couldn't make this blank, blank up. But that's it. You know, like, it all comes down to quality assurance, having proper systems and organisations in place. Well, the GCSB is a pig's breakfast, and it's still not sorted. And I mean,
It depends what you're actually trying to achieve, because it appears to me as though the GCSB director, who you know, is responsible for spying on all New Zealanders, gets appointed by the Prime Minister, and then they approve the warrants with the Prime Minister's say-so. So it just appears like a Stasi Gestapo headed by Mein Führer, you know, basically.
It's very dodgy, but I mean, I've done a couple of things. I mean, because I thought that I might be one of the 88 New Zealanders unlawfully spied upon, I contacted the Office of the Prime Minister and I said, okay, what's the process? To whom do I make a complaint? How do I find out whether or not I'm one of the 88 New Zealanders? And I was told from the Office of the Prime Minister to contact info at GCSB, contact the GCSB directly, because I thought, well, I contacted the Office of the Prime Minister, because the Prime Minister's in charge. I thought, oh, well, I'll muck around. Well, do I go straight to the Prime Minister? No. So then I find out that the Office of the Prime Minister has given me an incorrect email, because it bounced back. So then I contacted the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet. Now, a lot of people don't know that these are two quite separate roles and they have quite separate functions. The Office of the Prime Minister, where the Chief of Staff, Wayne Eagleson, he's the bloke in charge there, it's basically like a party political side where they're supposed to cover the Prime Minister's national party butt, as it were, and they're not supposed to be the ones that answer Official Information Act requests. It's not the Office of the Prime Minister that's supposed to give the impartial advice. That is the job of the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet. But here you don't have proper systems in place. It appears that people don't know their jobs, and that you've got this Wayne Eagleson, Chief of Staff, who is involving himself in a whole range of issues where, in my considered opinion, he should butt out because it's not part of his job description. And so, anyway, cut long story short, what happened was the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet, they gave me the correct email for the GCSB, so I made a privacy complaint, and I want, you know, and I asked the GCSB directly, so I followed the due process as outlined. Well, a month later, I go around in a big fat circle, then I get the official reply, we can't confirm or deny. So what was the point?
Well, that's a confirmation of sorts.
Well, but the thing is this, that, so I am not the only person. Apparently they were flooded with complaints or privacy complaints from people who thought they might be one of the 88 New Zealanders unlawfully spied upon. That process had not been completed in terms of the follow-through. I made a complaint to the Privacy Commissioner, and they are actively investigating my complaint. But because they've got bugger-all staff anyway, and the fact is that they have even less staff, because any staff from the Privacy Commissioner dealing with the GCSB must have security clearance, that narrows the number of people who can be involved. So before this GCSB bill was railroaded through Parliament, the complaints from people who thought they might have been one of the 88 New Zealanders involved hadn't finished going through a proper investigation. And guess what? The Rebecca Kitteridge report, which outlined a whole stack of systemic failures by the GCSB, she came up with 80 recommendations to tidy themselves up, and 76 the GCSB was directly responsible for. Well, guess what? As of the 30th of June, Director Ian Fletcher admitted, and it's on the GCSB's own website, that only 25 of the 76 Kitteridge recommendations had been implemented. So here's a brainy idea. We've got this intelligence service dealing with information. It's proven to be an absolute pig's breakfast. They haven't yet got their house in order. I know. Let's give them even more power.
Brilliant. Yeah, so that we can have a whole bunch of paranoid people who can violate everybody's privacy. Now, I'm also conscious of the fact that Lisa won't be with us for the full 2 hours. She's got a lot of thing on, and we're kind of taking up a lot of the talk time. Lisa, your take?
Well, I was going back to the milk powder that we were talking about. There's another aspect to that. Before you get to the stainless steel pipes, we had a big drought here in New Zealand over summer, and the farmers started importing feed. And the feed that they've been importing has had genetically engineered ingredients, probably soy.
Palm kernel.
Sorry?
Palm kernel.
Yes, but that's not genetically engineered. The thing wrong with that is that it's destroying the rainforest in Indonesia. But the genetically engineered ingredients, they are, of course, unbalanced. They don't work with the whole system of nature. So if you've got cows eating this and pooing this, it upsets the bacteria balance. And there are some vets in New Zealand who believe that the botulism scare, and it wasn't actually botulism itself, it was a bacteria that could cause botulism, that scare could have been caused by the imbalance of bacteria caused by feeding the cows genetically engineered food. So that's another thing that will have to be investigated, because they have come out in public, even though we haven't heard it on loud mainstream media, it is there. And this is part of New Zealand trying to have a clean green image. And then what happens is they import genetically engineered stuff from the US and bring it here and bring that imbalance into our natural system. So I'm quite up in arms about that aspect of it, as well as being very aware of the stainless steel aspect too, Penny. So I want to go back and just say, we talked about the events in New Zealand this Sunday, Kiwis Connect for a Positive Future. The website is kiwisconnect.org.nz. kiwisconnect.org.nz. And we've actually got a page there on transparency too, which refers to the things that Penny was talking about, and a page there on surveillance. But that's probably not quite as updated as I would like, but I seem to run out of time to do everything.
Yeah, it does happen that way, and we'll be coming to a break soon. And I find it very ironic that people are concerned about transparency in this country and claiming that there is none, the Prime Minister is not being transparent. I disagree. I see right through them. And the difficulty becomes, though, is that, as you were talking about earlier when we were speaking before Penny arrived, it's about awakening the masses. You can't do that unless you've got the mass media telling the truth, and they're just not doing it. They seem to be very cozy, very comfortable, doing their little crosscuts, glancing over issues, and not going in depth to the information that truly matters. Instead of letting the activists speak, they sum it up for them. It's not good. We'll be right back after the break.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times they are
welcome back.
Changing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that puts the harmonica in harmonizing. And isn't it interesting when they do all these laws like the food bill and what have you, how in trying to harmonize, they actually just wind up harming. It's quite hilarious like that. Now, Lisa Eyre from kiwisconnect.org.nz, you have a number of protests going off over the country. I think it's about 12 different locations, and we want to spend this segment just going over that and the reasons why people want to turn up and exactly where they're supposed to turn up to this Sunday. Go ahead.
Well, it's a demo for democracy. Democracy is not alive and well in New Zealand. We have a government that pushes through legislation that is not fully discussed. I'm speechless, really, about what's been happening. Everything's pushed through under urgency, and I firmly believe that the underlying reason for a lot of this stuff is the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement and the corporatization of the world. So our rallies this Sunday, slightly varying times, Kerikeri has gather at Kerikeri Domain, bring a picnic, there will be speakers and a time for you to have your say. Whangarei, Cameron Street, gather at 2 p.m. for a 2:30 march. Auckland, gather at Queen Elizabeth Square, which is at Britomart, at 2 p.m. for a march at 2:30. Walk to Albert Park via Wellesley Street and Princes Street, and gather at the Band Rotunda for speeches and some music. And Waiheke, you are joining us in Auckland. We thought about getting something going in Waiheke, but it's not there yet. And Hamilton, details are coming soon, but Hamilton, there is something in the pipeline. Tauranga, gather at the waterfront at 2 p.m., then march to Red Square. That's an interesting place to march to. Gisborne. Now, Gisborne are being very individual, and they decided that there's not many people in downtown Gisborne on Sunday, so they're going to do it on Monday. come together on Custom Street opposite the police station by the big Tanifar on September the 2nd at 2 p.m. with a planned departure at 2:30. Palmerston North, gather at the square in Palmerston North at 2 p.m. You'll be walking round the square. Wellington, Cuba Street, Bucket Fountain at 2 p.m. and march to the Beehive. Nelson, join in solidarity at the Cathedral Church steps for a sit-in at 2 p.m. Tarkaka, Golden Bay, 2 p.m. at the Tarkaka Town Centre. Christchurch, 2:30 p.m. gather at Latimer Square. Then you'll march west on Worcester past the damaged cathedral and go around the... enter the CCC lobby and exit on Hereford Street. I'm telling you this in case you're late and missed them at Latimer Square. March east through the Restart Mall, left on Madras Street and into Cardboard Transitional Cathedral for afternoon tea, and then back to Latimer Square for speeches. And Queenstown, there's a gathering at 2 p.m. lakefront at the Memorial Gate. So, and I'm hoping to have something in Napier. If there's anybody listening that would be prepared to host something in Napier, please let me know. But we've got a fantastic group of people, really, and we've also got a Facebook page. If you go Kiwis Connect on Facebook, Kiwis Connect for a Positive Future. And one of the things that we're doing in the rallies, if you're not holding a banner, you can bring pots and pans and bang the pots and pans, because we've got a number of people who are marching for different reasons. You see, all these connected reasons people could yell about, and that might upset somebody else. So if you've got pots and pans to bang, then it actually takes away the conversation and just makes the point. So we've got the government, how professional corporate lobbying denies us of our democratic voice, the TPPA, banks and incredibly unequal wealth, the media, we need the truth, food, seeds and pesticides and GMOs, the control of our food system, mining, corporate interests over local interest, climate, fossil fuel pollution and environmental issues, health, big pharma controls, fluoride, it doesn't just affect the teeth, education, privatising bulk funding charter schools, justice and prisons, they're being privatised, and on a more international thing, arms industry is promoting war, keep New Zealand nuclear free, and we will have a nuclear free banner for sure at Auckland. So all the, and there's other issues too, all those issues, we're coming together. So that's why it's a better idea to have pots and pans to bang or whistles to blow. If you're holding a banner, you can blow a whistle for whistleblowers like Bradley Manning and Edward Snowden. Because,
and they'll be the first people to be targeted and arrested. But yes, go ahead.
I don't think anybody should be arrested because it's supposed to be a peaceful protest. It's Father's Day. We want people to take fathers to take their kids and kids to take their fathers. So we don't want any sort of dramas on this occasion. It's not appropriate with children there.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that that we'll get a good turnout. And also I'd like to open the door to any people that can't go to there is a march in Auckland against the West's involvement in Syria. But if you can't go on the Saturday one, come with us, because this is all part of the overall financial agenda that's going on in the world, the dominance of the West. So it's appropriate to join us as well.
Mm-hmm. And indeed, Penny, you can shed some light on the Syria situation, because when a lot of people, I said this over the break, is when a lot of people talk to me about Syria and the bad things that are going on over there, I just go, are you serious? And they go, yes, I am serious. And I go, oh, that's so sad.
Well, the fact of the matter is, I mean, I remember really clearly back in 2003, I think it was about February, when we had a big march against the impending unlawful invasion of Iraq. And the reason given for this coalition of the killing, because remember, this never went through the United Nations. There was no international rule of law that applied to this unlawful invasion of Iraq, was because Saddam Hussein was supposed to have had weapons of mass destruction. And then it comes out, oh, actually, there weren't any. Meanwhile, I mean, all this concern about, oh, you know, the poor civilians being harmed by these weapons of mass destruction. Well, I put it to you that when you've got an invasion of a country, you've got military running around killing people, bombs dropping and all the rest of it, civilians get killed by unlawful wars. And it's just the same as all this hoo-ha about people in Syria who are supposed to have been poisoned. All we've seen on TV are some unwell-looking people. I have yet to see any medical certificates signed by independent doctors of death certificates. They died because of chemical poisoning, nerve gas or whatever. And that's the first thing. Seek truth from facts. I want to see lab reports that prove what was the substance that killed any of them, if, in fact, people did die of this. The other thing is, the secondary question is, well, even if people did die from chemical poisoning or nerve gas or whatever, the question is, who did it? And I cannot believe this massive rush to judgment at 30,000... Well, I can't believe it because it's been done before, actually. I take that back. That, oh, we're now going to invade Syria because of some dodgy thing said by some dodgy people, and the whole international rule of law, the whole basic principle of seeking truth from facts, we'll just let all that fly out the window, and here we go again. Well, nah, that's not okay. So that's why at 12 noon, I'm going to be at Aotea Square in Auckland. A demonstration has been called against this impending war on Syria, even though I can only be there half an hour because I've got another radio interview with somebody else at 1 o'clock. But the fact of the matter is, this is not okay. And our government needs to be held to task, that we have to demand as citizens that our government carry out the international rule of law regarding any form of invasion of other people's countries. That's not okay. You can defend yourself if you are attacked. But to go in and attack another country on this bogus basis that apparently some people have died or been made ill because of chemical attacks when there's no proof to back that up, this is just not okay, folks. Wakey, wakey, don't fall for a game.
What if you financed a rebel group or something of that nature in lieu of invading them in order to stoke up a whole bunch of tensions to give you the pretext and the excuse for invading them, Penny? Is that okay under international law? Because the CIA has apparently been doing that for decades and decades.
They certainly have, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're coming up to break now. We've got one more hour. I don't know how long. Lisa, are you able to stay with us for another segment? We've got another 17 minutes.
I'll be for half an hour, yeah. I'm okay half an hour. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Okay. We'll be back soon, ladies and gentlemen. And Penny kind of says this point quite a lot, but it's always correct because the truth never changes. Seek truth from facts. You don't seek truth from rumor. You don't seek truth from speculation. You don't seek truth from bribing politicians. You don't seek truth from surveilling and making the people afraid. You seek it from facts. And unfortunately, the media in this country are not doing that job very well. In fact, they haven't been doing it for a number of decades. We'll be right back. Thank you. bit of unity. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the Fukushima irradiated wasteland island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, where it's so bright that everybody must have a part-time job as an energy saver light bulb. There's certainly that much mercury in the fish down here. And my very special guests are Penny Bright, from waterpressure.wordpress.com, and Lisa Eyre from kiwisconnect.org.nz. Now, we have covered a number of things so far. We have talked about the unlawful setup of the Shupa Shethi and the TPPA, the Transgender Partnership Agreement, which will certainly destroy any form of economic prosperity for the entire oceanic region, essentially. Anywhere around the Pacific Rim countries, your economy is basically going to be under the control of the globalists now. And there won't be jack you can do about it, except in the world court, which they own. We've also talked about the invasion of Syria, the alleged upcoming invasion of Syria. We can see the drums of war being beaten overseas. We've talked about the many eclectic things that are wrong with this nation and the world right now, and how Lisa is attempting to bring them all together at the Kiwis Connect protests this Sunday, and in the case of Gisborne, on Monday. And of course, it doesn't matter how many topics you cover on a show like this where people are free to speak, because there's always more. Have you heard of the fractal universe theory? It goes like this, you know, you look into a cell, you know, just a normal, ordinary blood cell. And within that blood cell, you find out that it's made up of all of these other little cells that move around independently and make up that one cell. Then you look into one of those, and it turns out that that little one is also made up of all of these things, infinitely down. Same as when you look out into the stars, when you see a galaxy, you will actually see that that one galaxy is just one part of an entire red dwarf star cluster or something of that nature. And you zoom out on that, and the red dwarf star cluster is part of blue dwarfs, or so on and so forth. Infinitely up the scale and infinitely down the scale. That's the fractal universe. One thing equals another, further below or further above. It's the same thing. And when we talk about scumbaggery, which I believe is the main primary focus and cause of these problems that we are eclectically suffering upon planet Earth right now, it occurs to me that scumbaggery is also fractal, because at each particular instance of scumbaggery that you look into it, infinitely more quantities of scumbaggery come to light as you look slowly but surely deeper into these topic matters. This is the big picture. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a world government coming. It's being set up. It's openly admitted. It's all been planned for a very long time. War is part of it. Corporate interest is part of it. Making everybody sick is part of it. Surveilling everybody is part of it. And for me, I mean, that's part of the reason why I'll be there at Lisa Eyre's protest, is because of that broader agenda. And that is what I believe is the true connection between all of these things that this protest is collectively about. Lisa, Penny, words to add?
Well, Vinny, your description of the universe, to me, is totally how I think it is. I'm sure it's scientifically how it is. One of my passions is actually when we utter a sound, when we say a word, there again, you're putting out a vibration into the universe. So the reason I'm thinking about your repeating patterns of scumbaggery, or I would call human greed, is also why I'm trying to change the language that we're using in the demonstration. I'm using the word demonstration, not protest. Mm-hmm. Is because I'm trying to change the language into positive, so that we're putting out all those many, many waves into this universe of positive. And I sometimes wonder when patterns in nature, and I'm asking a question here, not giving a statement, but patterns in nature repeat. That's what a fractal is. It's a repeating pattern. So when you try and stop something, like Stop the GCSB Bill, that's actually working against the patterns in nature. This is just a theory. But if you try to put something like a GE-free New Zealand, a nuclear-free New Zealand, you're more likely to have success because it's actually putting out positively what you want rather than stopping what you don't want.
So are you calling for a GCSB-free New Zealand?
Well, that would be much better, yes.
An NSA-free New Zealand?
Yes. I'd be hoping for that, wouldn't I? The NSA has been surveillancing New Zealand for goodness knows how long, and so many of us have been under surveillance for goodness knows how long. It wasn't really very much of a surprise when Edward Snowden said things or when the GCSB bill came up, because I've known people who were, under surveillance and having their phones tapped since I was a teenager, and that was quite a long time ago, Vinny.
It's an interesting point that you raise, Lisa. For example, I mean, I've developed this action plan against white-collar crime, corruption and corporate welfare, but it's actually a framework for transparency. So what you've got, it's like you've got two sides of a coin. Myself, I mean, we may not be exactly on the same page on this one. I mean, I don't find anything wrong myself and clearly identifying what a problem is and saying that we need to stop something. But what I think is really important is that you're very clear about what you need to have to fix it. And I always think of a triangle where you broaden the base and narrow the target. Because often when you have people, demonstrating or protesting, you say, well, what do you want? And sometimes people aren't clear on what they want. They're sort of like having a bit of a vent. But in terms of, okay, what's wrong and what would fix it, I think you need to be very focused on what you want to change it to.
Totally agree, Penny.
Yeah, well, and let's not forget that the word demonstration has the word demon in it.
good on you, Vinny. Anyway, just in terms of helping on a cost-effective way, because, those of us who are on the bones of our bottom and run on the smell of an oily rag, we have to work out ways to be as cost-effective as possible. Well, I'm pleased to be able to report to you, Lisa, that I have helped this morning by sharing to a number of my Facebook friends information about the demonstration. Demonstration.
Demonstration.
And what I would really like to suggest to people, rather than just liking something on Facebook, just taking that little bit more effort to share it. Invite your friends. Get the word out. Because we are all centres of overlapping universes. We all have family, friends, neighbours, workmates, associates. And if we do what we can to ripple that message out amongst our universe and then others do it, then you've got all these, it interconnects and it really helps get the message out. So that's one thing that people can do. If you can text people, just say, you just get on your mobile phone and say, Sunday, 2 p.m, Auckland, blah, blah, and ask people to forward that text. That's a really effective way. It costs you bugger all. And what could be easier than that?
What I really hate is when the people say, oh, protesting doesn't matter, it's pointless, and then they don't turn up. They don't invite people to come. They don't help out. They do nothing and then claim that the people who are doing something are the ones that are wasting their time.
Sorry.
I was going to say, the thing with what we're trying to do here on Sunday is to raise the awareness of the problems. Because if the awareness of their problems is raised, the conversation starts. We still will have trouble with the media because our New Zealand media isn't impartial. We can start our own media. I mean, Vinny, you've got your own media. The more things that we can do in that way so that we can get the real stories out there, the better. So I'd like to see movement happening after the march. We've said 10 days of activities, but I've actually been too flat out to organise anything yet. But I've got 10 days to do something in. But really, to get the message out as to this massive greed that has consumed a very small, well, the 1%, as the Occupy people say, and the 99% people are going down the Googler. And then just add to that, and you've got war. You've got this incredible war machine driven by a few countries, such as the US, Britain, and France, and they're dying to go in and put some agenda in there to create dominance around the world. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is actually a challenge to China. It's a trade challenge to China. So there's so many big agendas that are not discussed in the media that we need to get the conversations going about.
Well, it's really simple in my view that everything boils down to a line in the sand. It's basically corporate versus the public majority. You see, like, for example, I'm going to bring this up. I mean, you know, I'm an Auckland mayoral candidate. Well, I'm not going to do something for all Aucklanders. I'm going to be a corporate nightmare. The posters that are up around town say that I will stop corrupt corporate control. So I'm using two C words there, and I can tell you right now it is really helping to generate a lot of discussion. And that's really important because with Auckland, the herd of mammoth elephants in the room is the Committee for Auckland. And I'll say it again. People, if you really want to know who is running the Auckland region like a business, by business, for business, just Google Committee for Auckland, go to their website and click on membership. Look at
Doesn't it cost you like a couple of grand or something to become a member?
Indeed. It is a private, powerful lobby group that is effectively the business roundtable, which no longer now exists, the business roundtable on steroids. It's CEOs of...
That's because people decided that they didn't like the business roundtable and saw that it was controlling Auckland by corporate means. And so they got together and formed a new club with a different name. And it'll take another 10 years to expose that. And when it does get exposed, they'll just change the name again. It's how these people work.
Well, they're going to be exposed, all right, because when I got my 300 words as a mayoral candidate in the Herald, I said, you know, who elected this unholy alliance of the New Zealand Property Council and the Committee for Auckland? I named them, and I did actually put the website there so people could look for themselves, but that got edited out. But guess what? When all the candidate booklets come out to every elector on the 20th of September, in my 150-word statement, I have named the Committee for Auckland and put the link to their website there. So that, you know, when that goes out to over 1 million people in Auckland, that is really going to get the discussion going. And surely mainstream media will be forced to pick it up, because I don't quite share your view about corporate media in terms of ignoring them. I don't agree with that. I think that you have to recognise that anything that you get that's positive from corporate media is a bonus. But I don't try to tell them what to do. I don't ignore them. And I have myself, and I know others have as well, have managed to get some very positive and useful articles on the occasional basis. I mean, it's not like you, Vinny, where you can get a good hour or so, and I mean, you know, you might get a couple of sentences, but something is better than nothing. But I just think it was quite a cunning move by some very dodgy people associated with particularly Occupy Auckland to try and dissuade people from having anything to do with corporate media, because that actually helped in a way to help clip our wings. I'm raising that, but obviously if those of us who are active can get, you know, an hour on a show anywhere, that's certainly better than a tiny little soundbite. But I don't believe in ignoring corporate media, but just recognise that you're not, you know, anything that you get that's positive is a bonus.
No, I'm not saying ignoring corporate media. I'm just saying we've got to have some other media too.
We've got to have some understanding about it. What I've found is that the people who make the most difference in this world are the people who don't ask for help. They just do something that helps.
I rather like that one, Vinny. But anyway, we're Thursday. So it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So we've got 3 days to help get the message out. I'm sorry, Lise. It was on my list of the 6,000 things to do before I die list to try and help to get the post. So if there's posters, very happy to help put some posters up. I'm sorry, I've just been swamped.
Yeah, Penny's got like this massive bucket list of revenge, you know, that she kind of like sits late at night wearing her V for Vendetta mask by candlelight, playing the organ beneath a giant operatic stage. You know, kind of thing. Penny Bright, the phantom of the protest.
We haven't managed to do posters because basically I'm the only person paying for anything here, and I did quite a lot of flyers, and it's costing me $300 for the banner that's at the front of the march.
What I'll do is I'll just, as long as, look, some is something that's got the key, why, when, where, details, that'll do. I understand. We can always just do our best.
Yes, thanks. We have a publicist down in Takaka who has sent media releases everywhere, and we have had I think it's Voxy and Yahoo have posted our media release.
Oh, very good.
Excuse me. I haven't heard back from BFM yet, so
What I find is incredibly effective and costs you nothing is that major blogs like Kiwi Blog, for example, right-wing hosts, a lot of very nasty right-wing people on there. For example, I put something up yesterday and it got 63 people didn't like it, but it's out there for people to look at, costs nothing. Under general debate, you can
advertise. Indeed. Penny, we're coming to break. Also, call into Talkback Radio and mention it on there. That's free coverage right there. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Oh, yes. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the most operatic 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from some kind of Italian opera theatre with my very special guests, Penny Bright and Lisa Eyre, on the air. And we have... Has anybody ever made that joke about your last name before, Lisa? You know, considering you actually do a radio show on Green Planet FM. Is that radio show by chance called Air on Air?
No, it isn't, because I do Tim Lynch's show. No, the big one I get is going through customs, because actually my real name is Elizabeth, and they look at Elizabeth ER and they say, oh, are you the Queen? Yes. They look at my passport, I'm meaning, you know, yeah. Anyway, Vinny, I am going to have to go. I'm afraid I've got an awful lot of things to try and pull strings to pull together about who the speakers are on Sunday. Penny, I'm sure you'll come and speak to us for 5 minutes some... at the end of the march, and
yeah, that would be lovely. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think I had asked you, but I'm just checking. And I've got a few more people I'm trying to pull together to get a really a good 20 minutes, solid 20 minutes after the march of good speakers. So that is my job today.
Am I included in that list, by the way?
I hadn't thought about that, Vinny, but I'm sure we could include you. Yes.
Excellent. And I'll be very calm this time. I won't do like the traditional protesting, yelling and screaming. I'll say, you know.
Thank you very much. Well, we could well have a lot of kids on the march. Who knows?
Yeah, indeed. Well, you know, what I do with protest marches now is I try to tell jokes over the megaphone with the chanting and regular stuff, and then try and speak calmly but very seriously towards the ends of the march. And I think it balances out quite nicely.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Lisa, thank you very much.
See you on Sunday, Vinny.
All right. And ladies and gentlemen, Lisa's websites are kiwisconnect.org.nz. That's Kiwis with an S, connect.org.nz. And also theawarenessparty.com. That's theawarenessparty.com. And Lisa, just again, want to thank you very much for your efforts, because I've been to lots and lots and lots and lots of protests, and they all seem to be organized by the same people. And they all seem to cover very minimal ground on and just very specific issues. And so since you've come along, that paradigm seems to be changing a bit, a broader awareness, broader minds, and broader reasons to come out and demonstrate what should be done, rather than just trying to endlessly stop things that endlessly keep coming at you. And thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Vinny. Thank you, and thank you, Penny.
Okay. Yeah.
Now.
Oh, well, good luck to the rest of your day, Lisa. Just
the draft.
One last.
Sorry. You wanted to say one last thing before we go on to the draft unitary plan?
Yes, I would. That in terms of people who may feel moved to come on Sunday, if you're not happy about the GCSB, if you're not happy about the proposed sale of Meridian Energy, if you're against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, war on the poor, the role of banks, attempts to control our food supply and introduce more genetically modified organisms, if you're opposed to mining fluoride, attacks on education, arms, etc., do come along. Corporate control is what this Kiwis Connect March is all about. And what we want is as big a, wider numbers of people as possible. Auckland, 2 o'clock, Queen Elizabeth Square, and that's Britomart, basically. And if you look for details on Demo for Democracy, you can find out where demonstrations are happening in other parts of New Zealand. Just giving that a final plug. Okay, thank you, Vinny.
Thank you, Vinny. Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, Lisa. Okay, now, Auckland, coming up with the draft unitary plan. This is the big issue for me. In fact, I covered it on the radio yesterday, Penny, that when I look at a unitary plan, when I look at whole things for the whole region, and when I look at the Committee for Auckland steering the whole thing, I see Agenda 21.
Yes, very, very interesting that you should say that. A lot of people haven't got a clue about UN Agenda 21. Just the real short version is that UN Agenda 21 came out of the Rio principles from 1992, Rio Summit, and the essence of it was, people of the planet's in a mess, it's all your fault, you need to sort it out, and you mustn't look at the role of corporations, particularly multinationals, they are out of the equation. And
Exempt.
And so, hello. So multinationals and corporations have got no responsibility towards polluting the planet through genetically modified organisms, through the effect on the environment, through war, and all those huge companies that make a fortune out of warmongering. Give me a break. Anyway, so that's the essence of UN Agenda 21. And as soon as you see the words sustainable, as soon as you see the word smart growth, ding, 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 they are UN Agenda 21 words. And what you've got to understand is, although they purport to be concerned about the community, what you've got to look at is the role of corporations, because under UN Agenda 21, what they're looking at is public-private partnerships, which, of course, are the, you know, the more modern form of privatisation, where what happens is that it helps to smooth out the highs and lows of the capitalist cycle, and big companies get a guaranteed income stream. So look at where the money's going, look at who's benefiting. So, but as far as the Auckland draft unitary plan, or as I prefer to call it, the daft lunatic plan, that has been based on the myth that there are supposed to be an extra 1 million people coming to Auckland over the next 30 years. Okay? Now, what happened is, because I'm an investigative activist and I've got a questioning mind, as soon as I heard these figures, because it's like, you know, it's like the Hitler technique of the big lie. You just keep repeating and repeating and repeating something so it becomes like a self-evident truth. And it's like, well, hang on a minute. Where did the extra 1 million people coming to Auckland over the next 30 years actually come from? And you do a bit of digging and you find out that the rule of law covering Auckland, the Auckland spatial plan comes from the local government Auckland Council Act 2009, section 794C, which is that spatial planning must be evidentially based. So, again, seek truth from facts. And what I managed to dig up was a letter from the Department of Statistics where they were specifically asked for their advice on population growth projections. And they were asked, did they think that a medium population growth projection that was reasonable for use for the Auckland spatial plan? And they said yes, medium population growth projection, which is about an extra 700,000 people. Then I find that there was one person, just one person, the chief planning officer for Auckland Council, Dr. Roger Blakely, who gave the advice that they should use the high population growth projection, which is an extra 1 million people. Well, I trolled through the minutes of the Auckland Council Future Vision Committee, which then morphed into the Auckland Council Auckland Plan Committee, for the evidence that showed that elected representatives voted to accept this advice from their chief planning officer, and I could not find any evidence in the minutes, which the prima facie evidence of proceedings, that they ever voted on it. I couldn't find any legal opinion that said it was lawful for the chief planning officer to give this advice to use the high population growth projections, or any legal opinion that it was lawful for councillors to accept that advice. So what I did was, because I know the process, I did a little petition of about 30 people and I managed to get an inquiry by the Social Services Select Committee. And they asked for, this was on the basis of a petition, questioning the lawfulness of Auckland Council relying on these high population growth projections, especially when major infrastructure suppliers, water care services for the water, Auckland Transport for the transport, they were relying on medium population growth projections. I was asked to provide further evidence, which I did, and you can find this on pennybrightformayor.org.nz. You can see the evidence there. And so what happened was, I provided evidence in the form of a letter from the Minister for Statistics, Maurice Williamson, who advised that the Department of Statistics were the place to go for information regarding population growth projections. So you get your advice from the experts and then you ignore it. Well, how brainy is that? And anyway,
it depends whether or not you have a agenda in place, and if the facts don't fit your agenda, you don't include them into your decision-making.
Well, what was to cut to the chase, the Social Services Select Committee, they reported back, and what? So my petition requested that Parliament declines to proceed with the Housing Accords and Special Housing Areas Bill until the lawfulness of the reliance of Auckland Council on the New Zealand Department of Statistics high population growth projections instead of their medium population growth projections for the Auckland Spatial Plan has been properly and independently investigated, taking into consideration that both Auckland Transport and Watercare Services Limited have relied on medium population growth projections for their infrastructural asset management plans. The report of the Social Services Select Committee, in summary, was that they asked the chief planning officer, who said it was prudent for Auckland Council to provide for the highest population growth, and the Mayor of Auckland has also said that using the high growth projection was the appropriate thing to do and that the council should not be too conservative in their assumptions about population growth. So
So,
have you considered Penny?
No, hang on, just let me finish. And so the select committee said, we consider that the response to this issue provided by council appears reasonable and therefore have no matters to bring to the attention of the House. Just finishing, my argument or my question was it lawful? And I don't care whether they think it was reasonable. These are the people, the MPs who make the law. Don't you think it's fair to expect them to uphold the laws that they pass? So I have sent yesterday an open letter to the Social Services Select Committee asking for them to urgently reconsider their report and base it on whether or not it was lawful. So I threw that little spanner into the works, and I've just rung this morning, tried to talk to the clerk of the Social Services Select Committee to check what have the Social Services Select Committee done with my latest request, because I did advise them that I intended to put this in writing to them. So, I mean, this is the thing, you know, seek truth from facts. Presume nothing, check everything.
Now, it's also part of the UN Agenda 21, to do smart growth. That means compacting people into particular areas and cities, and more or less trying to drive people off the land, and eventually will restrict all access to the land for people permanently. It's my contention, Penny, and I'm not sure, and I wonder if you've considered this, that the reason why they're perhaps using these projected growths is not because that's the natural projected growth, but because they're going to artificially make that happen by driving people off the land, forcing them into the cities. And this is also another part of the unitary plan, which we covered on the show yesterday, is that they will be allowing high rises to be built both in urban and suburban zones. And, you know, before we know it, it'll be like Mega City 1 on Judge Dredd. The cursed earth is outside the walls, and the only travel that you can do is restricted and highly surveilled.
Well, the issue here, which is getting a lot of traction now, is why does all this growth have to come to Auckland in the first place? Anyone would think that New Zealand stopped at the Bombay Hills and didn't go past the top of Rodney. It's like the skinniest part of New Zealand. They want to pack and stack everyone on top of each other. How dumb is that? And who benefits from all this Auckland growth apart from property developers, speculators and overseas investors? There are parts of this country where the infrastructure is going to waste. And if you have a planned population, migration and employment strategy, you can help encourage people to go and settle in other parts of New Zealand so we don't cram it all in Auckland. And yeah, it's just common sense. But the market madness model for growth is not a planned and sensible model, you have to look very hard at who's benefiting. And I would ask people to consider a form of corrupt practice known as state capture. And I'm looking here at the role of corporate charity and property developers working hand in hand in order to personally, financially profit from this Auckland growth. And here I'm referring to the Tamaki Transformation Development Project.
Well, we'll talk about the Tamaki Transformation Development Project just after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My guest currently is Penny Bright, a 20-year long-standing hardcore investigative activist, probably one of the most hardcore women that you've ever seen in this country ever. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Yeah, and no one like me.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. There's only one show like this in the whole world, really. You name me another show that talks about real serious issues 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, and puts in a little bit of wry humour there just to make sure that all of this terrible, horrible, no good, very bad business doesn't freak you out. For example, I just came up with a creative solution to the oil problem that they're having off the coast of Florida and all of these oil leaks and things since the Gulf of Mexico incident a number of years ago. I was thinking, you know, you get cops to stand on the beach and megaphone at the oil in order to try and get it to disperse. You know, you can get them saying,
"If you do not disperse, you may be arrested or subject to other police action."
I mean, it'd probably disperse it a lot nicer than corrects it 9500 at any rate. Penny Bright is my very special guest, and we were just talking before that. It's your 41st year of activism since 1972.
Well, in my seventh form year in 1972, I helped to set up a branch of the Hopeful Racist Tours movement at my college, Culinary College in Greytown. I did have sort of 12 years where it sort of went on low for a while when I was busy doing an adult apprenticeship as a sheet metal worker. And, but that gave me some knowledge and understanding, which has really helped since. Like, as you know, I've never been to university. I've never had a day's legal training in my life. But as a quality assurance coordinator for a large stainless steel fabricator, I was used to reading codes and specs. It's very similar to legislation, where you've got paragraphs which are separated by numbers and letters and brackets. The secret is just read it. Just read it. Because I tell you what, often the ones in power, they don't. They just make it up. And when you get to be in a court of law and you've actually got a judge who's just a wee bit, you know, maybe a little bit sympathetic that the occasional rather peculiar citizen stands on their hind legs and has a go, and you quote the law, and you get your enemy in the witness box, and you can see they're just making it up. I think that's part of the reason why I have been very successful in court, because, read the law and demand that it's upheld. How hard
now,
is
you've been arrested 22 times at Auckland Council meetings.
Oh, right? Yeah, there's Auckland Council, but... in my life, I would have been arrested over 40 times, but it's all political. But, I mean, that's the thing.
That's an average of one arrest per year, you know? You're not messing around.
Well, the thing is that I think we're just sort of past that stage, because where it was rather hilarious with Auckland City Council, and then the cops refused to come. They were sick of losing in court. And in the end, they said to the mayor, "We're not your security guards." So the mayor calls the sheriff, and the sheriff says, "Well, we're not coming." It's probably a little bit unusual.
And now they get private security guards to throw you out, as they did me that time when I was just filming you.
Well, I have to say that under the Auckland Council, we've sort of, I think we've moved to a new stage now. And, I mean, I remember back in the bad old days, what, about 2004, 2005, when you used to go to council meetings and make submissions. It's like you're this little bit of dirt and they were way up high and all powerful. It doesn't feel like that now. They listen.
Yeah, maybe not for you, Penny, but, you know, they've gained respect for you because they know that they'll lose at the end of the day if they act tyrannical. But who says they treat everybody like that now?
Well, the thing is they should treat everyone like that in a proper way. But, you see, the thing is that I just want to put in a bit of a plug here and seize the moment. As you know, I am standing again as a mayoral candidate, but what I think so exciting this way around is, given that 50% of people don't even vote, given that the vote's liable to be quite sort of split because the Reverend Yusuf Feli Unafa is standing against Len Brown, because basically Polynesian people have not been well served by Len Brown, that'll help split the vote. We've got an American, John Polino, who has not been to one council meeting. Not one council meeting. So I kindly refer to him as like Johnny Cash. And then there's Johnny come lately. Fellow activist John Minto, who over the 35 years that I've known John, and I've got a lot of respect for his ability to focus and to work hard on issues which have helped a lot of people. But by the same token, I think that if you want to be the mayor, you need to put the time into local government. And these two Johnnies have not. I mean, I've got a 15-year track record in local government. I know how it works. I know what the problems are.
You were even given a good citizenship award, weren't you?
Yes, I was. In 2010, I was given a good citizens award for my work in trying to get more transparency with council contracts, and also in my work opposing the privatisation of water. And it was quite a controversial award, But no, all that, you know, so... But the thing is that what I think so exciting is, get a load of this, that the mayor's office gets about $5 million a year to implement the vision. Well, I've got posters that are all up around the place saying, vote Penny Bright for mayor and I will stop corrupt corporate control. That's my vision. So imagine that, having $5 million to actually like have like a little anti-corruption commission coming from the mayor's office.
You told me that you wanted like a hotline for council whistleblowers to call in and that they would be protected. Yes.
Well, what I want to do is, as mayor, I want to use the town hall for democracy. I mean, how wild is that? But what I would want to do is to hold meetings.
I'm radical.
I know. Is to hold meetings with council staff and explain that under the Protected Disclosures Act, which is actually the Whistleblowers Act, that they have a lawful right as employees to raise issues which they feel concerned about. But because I think that this infestation of corporate cockroaches is everywhere, including in key council positions, I'm going to make a hotline available directly to me as mayor, and I will have an independent little team of forensic investigators attached directly to the mayor's office, which can investigate any issues of corrupt practice and also to find out where every dollar of ratepayer money is being spent, invested, and borrowed. Now, sure as hell, that's not what they, what was the intention of that legislation, to give the Auckland mayor all this power to use it against these corporate interests that run Auckland like a business, by a business, for business. But where I am now much more subversive than I've ever been in my life, it's the concept of using the system against the system, using the law against the law. And what are they going to do? As mayor, trying to make sure that we have genuine, open, transparent and democratically accountable local government at Auckland Council level. What are they going to do? Take me to court? Bring it on. I love court.
Yeah, you love, you do. The other element that I think is really important here is the participation of front-level staff in high-level decision-making. I spoke to a child, youth and family services officer on Facebook, can't reveal their name or anything like that, but they admitted that it was corrupt and that it's run by, like any other corporation, from the top down, and the people up the top making this decision have had no frontline experience, so they don't even know what it is they're implementing or what kind of an impact it's going to have, because they don't include those people in the decision-making process. This, I think, is a revolutionary idea.
Well, the fact of the matter is that you cannot take people from the private sector and expect them to transmogrify into competent public servants. When you've come from the public, from the private sector, your job is to make money for shareholders. And you bring your private sector ways with you. You don't know the law that covers the public sector. You don't have the culture. You don't know the regulations. You're on a different galaxy. And what I want to do is to demand that we go back to the public service model, which is not run as a profit-making enterprise. It's there to serve the public majority. And by cutting out all these thousands of consultants and private contractors who've got their snout in our public trough, who are not providing cheaper services because the rates keep going up, by getting rid of all these private piggies in the middle, will free up hundreds of millions of dollars.
Penny, we're almost coming to the end of the show here. Would you be able to guarantee the people of Auckland, if they voted for you, to not just stop rates from going up, but actually to bring them down significantly?
What I need to do is, first of all, the books must be open because they're not yet open. And you can't do line-by-line accounting when you're not given the devilish details that show exactly where the money's going. But what I can say is, by getting rid of all these consultants and private contractors, that should free up hundreds of millions of dollars from which the public majority can benefit. And if you want to find out more, check out pennybright4mayor.org.nz, and you can see what I'm talking about here. But we've got a chance to make history. Rogernomics
got a kickoff in this country, don't you think it would be historic to help roll back Rogernomics from the
Auckland? Instead of giving it a kickoff, we should give it the boot down.
Whatever. But anyway, it's exciting times, and if people do nothing else, just Google www.committeeforauckland.co.nz, look on membership, and you will find out for yourself who is really running the Auckland region, and it will blow your mind.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, and the fractal universe theory also applies here as well. In steering committees and think tanks and things of that nature in the United States, this is how the so-called New World Order agenda winds up being implemented, because you have all of these very highly influential, highly placed, wealthy people that are part of these group think operations, what they call think tanks, to get them all brainwashed into believing the same mantra with no evidence, and then implement it upon everybody else. And guess who benefits? Not them. Well, of course they do in the interim, but the much larger wolves at the top, far above them, the billionaires, the trillionaires, so on and so forth. Where does all the money come from? Where is all the money being spent? Deep Throat said follow the money, and yet nowadays investigative reporting sounds kind of like this. And now we're cutting to our Middle East correspondent, regime, terrorist, some kind of veiled threat, regime, back to you in the studio. Thank you very much, and we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Penny Wright signing out.